Boom, 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 doom. Hello, America, how are you? Hello, my name is Jeff Headley.
I'm Nick Melton.
And welcome back to the Original Unoriginal Podcast. It has been a hell of a long time.
I can't remember the last time we recorded a podcast.
It was actually about 2 months ago, almost to the day.
Oh, wow.
That yeah.
It's been a while, yeah.
So it's been a while, yeah. It's been a while.
It's been a long time. Now I'm podcast. Oh.
Well, anyway, a bit of a brief explanation.
You don't have to speak so quietly.
I'm feeling very nervous because this is the first time we've ever recorded outside of Nick's newest place.
My new house. I mean, we've got this big wall of trees here. The sound's not going to go all over the trees into their house and disturb them.
Okay.
Speak. Don't worry.
It's just you're in a real-ass neighborhood for once. You're not just in an apartment building.
Yeah, well.
Okay. I'm just saying this is coming.
I mean, and the thing is, in the apartment building, we were actually adjoined via a wall
this
to the neighbors, and we didn't bother with volume.
It's a Monday night, I live in a neighborhood where I can hear my neighbors hate fucking on a nightly basis, and no one seems to care.
Well, we're in a town, the town where I live now.
Yes.
So,
a bit of an explanation. We were going to do a whole January. We both had some pretty big plans for January.
We did.
I was going to do my Danuary, a month of movies starring Daniel Stern, and you had your John Carpenter month ready to go.
Yeah. It's still planned. It'll just come a little later.
It'll come at a different time. But what exactly happened? Let's think of all the things that happened. It was just the holidays.
The holidays, you had some familial crises.
I had some familial crises. You had a few as well. And then we were just kind of like, and then one day I just was talking to you, and I was like, you know, let's just take a break, man.
And you know what? The break, I think, has been a good thing.
It has been so good.
We've been able to sort through our issues, not worry about putting out a podcast every week, or 2 weeks in my case.
Which kind of leads to a couple of announcements as I click on the stickies to tell you about them. So first off, ladies and gentlemen, starting this week, the OUP will now be a bi-weekly production. We realized that with the distance between us, trying to put forth four episodes each, or I mean, there were in my case four episodes a month, you know, a full month's worth, was a little difficult considering how little we get to see each other.
And especially since we've both had a lot of difficulties recording long distance episodes.
And we've decided we're going to nix those entirely.
Yeah, I mean, the difficulties that we had with those, I mean, some of the episodes turned out to be really good. But the trouble that it took to record them almost made it not worth it.
It really kind of... that kind of sucked out our joy for doing this. So we're killing that. So what's going to happen starting this week is OUP will be 1 week, Cinemantics the next, OUP the next. Going back and forth like that just from here on out. This also means that the seasons of the OUP will be shortened from 52 episodes to 26, which means our season 2 finale will now be episode 78 coming up in June. And then we'll start with season 3 and so on and so forth. So that's just all the logistical things that are happening. Oh boy. So, how you been, Nick?
I've been busy. My winter term... See, the thing is, my school is odd in that it runs in terms rather than semesters. I mean, your school operated on semesters in the school I used to go to. The same school operated on semesters.
The University of Choice.
Yeah, the University of Choice, and now I'm at a school that operates on trimesters, and it's very odd because none of my breaks line up with any of my friends' breaks, and it's inconvenient. But
yeah, but on the plus side, a lady can have a baby according to your schedule. Exactly. What?
Exactly. What? I'm in no danger of getting a girl pregnant anytime soon, so...
Well, that's not what I was implying.
I'm just saying
always...
I won't have to worry about pregnancy.
Right, but I'm saying you always hear about, you know, it's my second trimester, Burger Burt, you know?
Right.
Oh, that's another thing. Like, you know, we were both kind of in a very stressful place when last we recorded. Like, it was kind of a building stress, not just with regard to, like, recording so often, but we had a lot of personal situations that were going on that were just kind of weighing heavy on our minds. And as Nick can attest, as my best friend in this world, when things aren't going my way, I tend to overcompensate by being ridiculously loud and ridiculous. So our show kind of lost its way in a way. I mean, I hope you were entertained by episodes 50 through 68-ish.
There were some good moments in there.
There were.
I felt that Especially during the break, I had the chance to listen to some older episodes, and I felt that we needed, and you felt too,
yeah,
that we needed to return to our roots. You know, we'd become so, like, slick.
Yeah, like...
And we'd sort of lost the... Why don't we just get drunk and record a conversation? You know, like, we would never do that before. We gotten to the point where we planned everything meticulously.
And that was actually a mistake.
And it was a mistake.
Yeah.
And so we sort of became, like... I mean, it was almost kind of your intention at the beginning to do the Kevin Smith, Scott Mosier, Smodcast thing, where they just sort of, like, introduction, bam, conversation.
Yeah.
But I feel like us personally, we're not Kevin Smith and Scott Mosier.
No,
we love,
I mean,
those guys.
I never would have suggested we were. I mean, you remember.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, but in some of the earlier episodes, like, I was listening to some older ones too, and I was listening to one where I made a point of saying, listen, our conversational style in this format is definitely inspired by Smodcast, and you
inspired,
should definitely.
Inspired, but shouldn't be a copy.
Exactly, but I mean, please listen to that before you listen to us.
So I feel it bears mentioning that we are outside.
Yes.
And we are smoking cigars in tribute to the first episode we ever did together, which was recorded on my birthday way back in 2009.
Yeah, it feels like it's been a long time.
It's
actually
been a very long time. I can't remember the last time we sat outside and smoked cigars.
Episode, I mean, we did it again at some point, but never as memorably as that one.
Yeah. I mean, that was the birth of our podcasting partnership. I remember at the time, I had like a feeling of desperation, sort of like, Jeff is doing this really cool thing, like, where he records things and puts them on the internet, and that sounds awesome, and I really, really want to be involved in that, so only if I do one episode, just one, I'll be happy.
Yeah.
It was just, like, a feeling of wanting to get on the podcast at all. It was like I felt privileged to be on it, and now I'm your co-host, and it's kind of awesome.
And you weren't using me. You weren't.
I wasn't.
I promised myself I wasn't going to say things like,
well,
that.
I feel
I'll
like,
stop right there and never
I feel like we've
again.
Been off the air for, I mean, by the time this airs, it will be like a month and a half. And, I mean, I feel like we do owe the listeners some sort of explanation, even if not an in-depth one.
Yeah. Here's what happened. And this happens, I mean, this happens to a lot of podcasters. And I've seen it happen. And Chris Hardwick of The Nerdist, one of our recommended podcasts, has talked about this on a number of occasions, that, I mean, it doesn't matter what you do, podcast, anything you do online, if one person makes a negative comment about you, you get it in your head that, like, oh my God, the whole internet feels this way.
Right.
And so, like, although to be fair, I mean, like, I don't know, I don't want to give, you know, the negative commenters much credit, I mean, there was just the one, but, you know, it was a stressful time, and is it kosher to be talking about this?
Well, I mean, I think you make a sacrifice when you put yourself out there on the internet. Just putting yourself out there on the internet at all is sort of you sort of make a little sacrifice to your privacy.
Right.
And if you want, in my opinion, if I care about people like podcasters, like our good friend Paul Chapman at The Greatest Movie Ever,
yes,
or Kevin Smith and Scott Mosier, or Chris Hardwick, because you learn, like, details about themselves throughout their podcasting, you start to identify or like them as people, and
yeah,
that's what makes them compelling people to listen to. So I feel like if you're going to be a podcaster yourself, you should be willing to reveal a certain extent.
Well, that wasn't even what I meant. Like you know, I mean, we can take criticism. We've gotten criticisms, good and bad, from all kinds of sides. And, you know, we've used those to improve and better our shows. And I mean, I did it back in my radio days as well. So that wasn't a problem, but we got some, like, straight up personal attacks that kind of,
and combined with the stress and, like, school stress and job
stress,
stress
of doing
and,
a weekly show,
you know, that, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people just sort of think, oh, you do a podcast, oh, you're just like all the other hundreds of people out there who do podcasts, but doing a podcast is a lot of work.
Well, not only that, like, it's not, the thing is, like, we're not delusional. We know that we're not playing to a million listeners.
Oh, no, I've got,
and
like,
that,
30 listeners at most.
Mine go up and down, but, like, I mean, listen, if we only had, like, one listener that wasn't us, I'd be fucking happy as hell, man.
I mean, I don't do it for the listeners.
I don't
well,
either.
I mean, like, I do it because I enjoy doing it. And if I put out a product that I think that people will enjoy, which I hope they do.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nice to have the feeling that somebody is listening.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, I feel like I'm doing my job.
But in addition, you know, one of the things, and they were actually talking about it on a Nerdist I was listening to earlier with Sarah Silverman, They were talking about the fact that, you know, when you're talking about like gauging podcasts and success of a podcast, it's not always about subscribers. I mean, it's also about individual downloads. And in terms of individual downloads, we're doing bang up numbers.
Oh yeah, I mean, I have my episode for Dawn of the Dead on Cinemantics, which came out last February, I think.
Yeah,
that has something close to 550 downloads, which is probably not a lot in the grand scheme of podcasting, but for me, that's a I think that's an achievement.
Yeah, I mean, the highest, or I mean, let's just be completely frank here. The highest downloaded episode of the OUP has 232 at the last check, and that is our episode on George of the Jungle, inexplicably. I don't know why that one's
maybe
the one.
Maybe people, John Cleese fans, saw the title, the John Cleese monkey, and thought, oh, download it.
Yeah, yeah.
John Cleese and a monkey? Gold!
Yeah.
You know.
But I mean, yeah, like that's magic to me. I love that. That makes me so happy. Like,
I'm happy with 5 downloads.
Exactly. It's not about like that was part of the reason why we kind of backed away, is because it stopped being about this is this hobby we do, and we love even the small number of people who listen to us, and even people who subscribe just, you know, out of support for us. Even that, like, that's still awesome to me.
Yeah.
I love all you people. Thanks a pant load, man. Like, that's. Pantload. That's seriously, thanks to everyone who listens. And listen, like, we don't have a lot of commenters. That is not what this is about. It is about, well, for me, it's for a lot of things. It's about, you know, practicing for radio, which that was one of the things that, like, I realized we need to take a break, because we had gotten so, like, stressed about certain things that, you know, I mean, I think you kind of fell into it too, not kind of by way of me doing it, that, like, when I get stressed, I over exaggerate.
Right.
Or get a little too brash, and I think you kind of fell into that too just by being with me.
Right.
And I think that was a problem, but
I'm not disputing the quality of the stuff we put out.
No, but I'm saying, like, and I hate to put it this way, this sounds kind of selfish, but it's true. Like, I mean, I'm trying to get into the radio business, and I've had very good success in the radio business back in my days at the University of Choice. People enjoy what I did, and you know, I'm trying to get out there into the real radio business, and you know, I don't want them to listen to us like making all these like loud self-referential stuff. Like, as good
I mean, as much as I enjoyed it, I think in recent months the podcast, especially the OUP, just because. Because we have this rapport that we've developed that comes out a lot in just the way we talk to each other. In the conversational episodes especially, a lot of it fell back on these numerous inside jokes.
That the audience wouldn't get. I mean, some would. But...
I mean, some of them would, and maybe people who've been listening the entire run of the show would get some of them. But, I mean, we speak to each other almost exclusively in references, and we realize that...
Damn that Joss Whedon.
Thanks, Joss. We love you, and I love that he loves the Scott Pilgrim comic book series.
Oh, yeah, man.
But, you know, it doesn't necessarily make for good podcasting.
Exactly.
But I don't want to feel like we're making excuses for our podcasting.
No, it was just...
I don't want to disown our podcasting.
The fact of the matter is, there's a lot of things. I was in a bad emotional state because I had just moved back home from college, which had been, you know, I'll put it bluntly, like 5 years of the best, 5 of the best years of my life. And, you know, going back to my hometown, which, you know, I've spent the past 5 years being conditioned to hate my hometown. And listen, politically, culturally, I'm somewhat tipsy,
it's
I guess.
The culture of poultry.
Yeah, the culture of poultry.
Culture.
Let's stop. The point is, like, I've spent the past 5 years being convinced that I'm supposed to hate my hometown. And,
you know, I get the impression that maybe your hometown isn't exactly that bad a place.
No, it's not.
It's just that some of the people there make it unpleasant.
It's really true. Listen, I love that place growing up. And I tell you, like, you know, listen, like, politically and culturally, I disagree with a lot of what that town has to offer. But the fact of the matter is, I spent, you know, the first 18 years of my life loving that place. And I just, you know, by spending all my time bitching about being there and hating being there, I was just creating stress for myself that I didn't need. I was actually creating more stress than I actually had naturally.
Yeah.
And that wasn't good for me. So, no. Like, just this whole experience has been a real, like, emotional learning experience.
Well, you know, you grow up and you learn things.
You do. So that's what we've been dealing with. Like, it's you know, listen, we thank those of you who stuck around. Like, listen, like I said, we're not delusional. We know that that's a lot of people listen sporadically. I mean, he's got the higher download numbers of Mr. Melton here, but that's just because, like, you've got something that's much more open to just, like, an individual audience. I like this movie. I'll watch it. And I'm the jackass who makes the mistake of, there's a dog in the neighborhood.
There is a dog in the neighborhood.
I make
the ambiance.
Yeah. I make the mistake of, you know, titling all my movie. This is going to be... Shecky!
Oh, man, they've got a big dog. They've got several big dogs.
They don't have a dog.
But you know, the thing is, though, it sounds loud to us, but the air conditioner in my old apartment was incredibly loud when it came on the podcast back in the day. So I doubt that dog will be too distracting to the listeners, and he'll probably stop in a minute.
Right.
Shaky!
Yeah. But anyway, God, what was I talking about?
I don't remember.
Perfect.
We've had a little drinkage tonight.
Well, let's talk about that, because that was an adventure.
It was an adventure. I think it needs a little bit of backstory. I mean, as I mentioned, I was of the opinion that we should try and reboot the podcast by going outside with cigars and wine.
I kind of hate that word, though.
It's the word I pick. I know want it as a continuation, but I wanted to go back to our roots. Maybe that's a better way of putting it.
Yeah, yeah.
Go back to the roots. So I was like, why don't we get wine and cigars, and we'll sit on the back? And Jeff was like, no, I'm more of in a liquor mood.
Well, in addition, like this, I mean, this is, we're recording this, technically it's now, it's February 1st, but this whole thing started on January 31st. And even in discussion with my mom before I came, up here to visit you, I said, you know, this trip is kind of intended to be kind of the last act of my birthday, which was, you know, like 13 days ago. But like, I just wanted to, you know, kind of, with the liquor and the cigars, like I wanted to get back into, I wanted to really celebrate. And, you know, yeah, so instead of going for wine, we went to the old ABC store.
ABC store. That's one of the things I really don't like about North Carolina, is how prudish we are about everything, especially liquor laws.
Yeah.
I've been to several other states. I've been to several other countries. You can just go into a grocery store or a drugstore, like in a CVS in Kentucky, you can just go in there and buy like a bunch of liquor.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's so convenient. And it's like, nope, in North Carolina, you've got to go to the ABC store because I can't think of a good reason.
Well, there's not a lot of good reasons for things around here, but
Boosh.
I mean, I knew somebody who went to Chicago on a vacation, and they told me that like when they went to Chicago, they were able to use their CVS discount card to buy liquor.
That's amazing.
Like that's fucking awesome. Like that's baller. But
I think it's only a matter of time until things start to change for the better. Like, I mean, in general,
yeah.
Like I was thinking, I don't know why I was thinking about this the other day, because there was no reason to. I was at work, and I work at...
Boom, boom, boom. Muffins.
And,
we're going to get blunt now?
We're going to get... Well, it's not really that
blunt. No longer the bread establishment.
The bread establishment. You can bleep it out,
I guess. I'll muffins that.
Muffins it? Okay. Yeah. I'm working at the bread establishment, and I was thinking for some reason about... there was no impetus for this. I'm not sure why I was thinking about it, but about popular acceptance of gays and gay rights and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was thinking to myself, you know, we're all about some, like, fighting the Republicans and the conservatives about gay rights now, but just wait, like, 15 years. Wait until our generation takes office.
That's true.
Because, like, our generation is clearly the most open-minded generation that's ever really existed in terms of civil rights or that sort of, you know, that sort of subject matter. So it's really just playing the waiting game. Wait until the old farts get out of office and people of my generation take over. Then I guarantee, well, I don't guarantee it. I don't want to predict the future, but I predict that boom, 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 so much legislation will be passed to correct the wrongs that have been done.
Also, boom, 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 muffins.
Right.
And it's very it's very rare that we'll speak any positivity about our generation, because we kind of fuck up a lot.
We do, but I mean, any generation fucks up a lot, I think. I think that I sometimes have this thought, you know, every generation says, oh, the youngins these days, back when I was growing up, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, well, if it's only been a steady deterioration, I can only imagine how perfect the original line of humans was.
Yeah, yeah.
If all we've been doing is doing worse and worse and worse from the older generations.
Yeah.
So I think we should cut our generation a little slack, but I mean, I think it's true that Facebook and the internet and, text messaging. Well, let's talk about Facebook a little bit, because you and I disagree on that. I think, yeah, it has affected the way we communicate and the way we speak and grammar and writing and stuff, but I think it's wrong to dismiss an entire generation because of it.
I'm not dismissing the generation. I'm dismissing people who misuse Facebook.
Well, see, that's one thing. I don't know if this bears any explanation, but you despise Facebook.
Can
you give reasons for this in a way that is not privacy invading?
Yeah, I've always had kind of a really tenuous relationship with Facebook. It's the same way I feel about, like, I'm applying for a lot of jobs right now, and everybody uses online applications. Nobody uses paper anymore, which, I mean, I get some environment, but the problem is, you know, it's so impersonal. and it causes more problems than it stops. And I feel, and the thing is, like, I have these conversations with my mom a lot. You know, she's in her 50s, and I'm kind of a 65-year-old man inside. So we have these conversations about, like, you know, why can't things be as simple as they used to be? And the thing about the internet is, you know, it's just, you know, it's something that like, I kind of wish didn't exist. But everyone's so used to it, and everyone depends on it so much that it's just kind of hard to escape. And Facebook has become something that's very similar, which is, you know, it started, you know, 5-6 years ago, and God, I just, if more than anything, I just kind of wish it was still just college exclusive.
Oh, well, everybody does. Yeah. I mean, nobody wants their mom on Facebook. Nobody wants high school people on Facebook.
That's not even the problem. It's just,
well, I don't want my mom on Facebook. I mean, I love my mom, but she, like, comments to me a lot about, oh, I read your status and it was too whiny and no one cares. I'm like, well, you just defeat the, why are you even on it if that's your mode of thinking?
Well, I mean, that's not my way of thinking, but you know what I'm saying. Like, I'm just right. Like, you know, I miss the days when we used to meet people as physical beings.
Well, see, that's the thing. My mom always encourages me to try dating websites because that's just the way people do it now, and I refuse. Because I grew up at the cusp of the internet. Like, cause yeah, the internet, did. Like, I saw some...
Boom, boom, boom. Muffins.
Posted a clip of the internet being explained to someone in 1994 and them not knowing what it was.
You do realize I'm gonna muffins that too, right?
I didn't.
We're trying to retcon certain people at this point.
I didn't realize that was our intent.
It's fine.
Whatever. A person
posted
a clip of Katie Couric and someone else trying to explain what the internet was in 1994 and these people being utterly baffled by it. So I was, what, 9 at that point? So not that old, but not that young either. So I grew up at the cusp where, you know, people still met people like individuals.
Yeah.
So I refuse to use dating websites because I'm like, if it worked for 2,000 years that we met people like normal individuals, that's the way it should remain. And I know from personal experience, online chemistry and in-person chemistry are not exactly the same thing.
Not remotely.
You can have a great spark online with someone and then you meet them and you're like, really?
Yeah.
And that's been like my 100% experience. So I've decided not to do any of that. But I think that Facebook is one of the most... really, the reason I'm on Facebook so much is mainly just because a lot of my friends use that for communication more than anything else. Like, if my friends use Instant Messenger or email more than anything else, I wouldn't use Facebook so much.
No.
It's just that that's the preferred means of communication these days. And let's face it, Facebook has made communication with people all around the world possible in ways that weren't before.
No, I mean, I won't dispute, like, certain things like that are positive, but it's also created this mentality, and some people misuse it. You know, we can speak from personal experience that some people have come to use it in this weird, like it's almost become everyone's personal PR firm. And I mean that in the most negative way possible, because...
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that. I think that the negative side of Facebook is that it reinforces that people should be, like, people... Oh, I'm cool, and everything I say, people will be interested in. Like, I went, like, before I started getting a Twitter account, and I know people still criticize me for that. I know, because people criticized me for it, like, 2 weeks ago.
I won't criticize you about it, because the fact of the matter is, actually, I appreciate Twitter far more than I appreciate Facebook.
Right. But the thing is, Twitter, one of the main problems I had with Twitter, and one of the reasons why I didn't use it for a long time, is because people were using it to post things that were not interesting at all. Like, I'm going to the beach today.
Yeah, yeah.
I had chocolate syrup on my pancakes. Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
No one. I felt that when you use Twitter and Facebook that way to just post little insignificant details about your life that no one cares about, it just reinforces that this is the me generation. Like, everything we say and do is so important. It's not.
No.
I think that one of the main flaws of our generation is that we think we're so important, and we're not. We need to, you know, learn some humility. And I think when people use Facebook that way, yeah, it's bad. I prefer to use it mainly just to keep in touch with my friends. I mean, I hope you see that I don't really use it for malicious intent. And I don't use Twitter that way either. My Twitter posts are always just like little movie reviews. Or here's a link to an article that I thought was interesting. Oh, here's something I noticed in here are the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominees for this year.
Yeah.
You know, things that I think people in general would find interesting. Or worthwhile. I would never post something like, oh, I just got back from work and I really don't like that muffins are brown.
Okay.
That was a bit weird, but yes, you see where I'm going with that.
Yeah, I do. I mean, and you, well, I mean, you see how I use it. Well, I honestly, Facebook has become, it's so not personal anymore for me. It's just, holy shit, the trailer for this movie's out.
Right.
Or on Twitter, it's on Twitter, I kind of use it the way most stand-up comedians do. And I mean, that's one thing you got to say about Twitter, and also podcasting. We talked about this before. Podcasting and Twitter have, like, just created this comedy revolution that is beautiful for people like Doug Benson and Chris Hardwick. We keep mentioning him, but it's true. But, like, Doug Benson, I mean, he's wonderful, but, like, I mean, he's a massive name now, almost solely based on, like, Doug Loves Movies.
And the fact that he uses his Twitter account exhaustively.
Exactly. I mean, like, it's a that's a beautiful thing. And, I mean, I'm not saying...
Well, the great thing about Twitter to me, apart from the fact that, you know, a lot of people use it, and thus you can get your thoughts out to a wide form of people, is that it allows you access to celebrities and people that you wouldn't be able to interact with otherwise. And I don't want to sound like one of those starstruck people like, oh my God, you know, Justin Timberlake's on Twitter. But I mean, like, it's the only way that you can really, like, voice your opinion about someone and maybe they see it and respond
to it. Sir, don't you remember how excited I was when Natalie Morales responded to me?
I remember that.
I'm just saying, like, that's Natalie Morales, not to be confused with the NBC News Natalie Morales. We're talking about the awesome Natalie Morales who.
From The Middleman.
The Middleman and now Parks and Recreation.
Who is amazing.
She's amazing.
I love her.
But, like, yeah, I mean, that's... I don't know. But, I mean, yeah.
That's a little petered out a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. Should we continue talking about the liquor? Because we never got to that story.
Oh, right.
We were going to...
Right, like 15 minutes ago, yeah. We were going to talk about the liquor.
We were going to do liquor tonight, and we decided to go to the ABC store. So my good friend Mr. Melton here enjoys his Gentleman Jack, and I do too. That's a smooth-ass whiskey right there. This is intended to be kind of a secondary birthday celebration. Wanted to find something that would be, like, interesting or notable. And the one thing we really wanted was a bottle of Danny DeVito's Limoncello, of course, the liquor that he famously got drunk on and went on The View. So I wanted to...
I like that he got drunk on his own liquor, for one thing.
Well, that's not what happened. He got drunk on a different brand of Limoncello, and after that experience was like, you know what? I like Limoncello. I'll make my own.
That makes me love Danny DeVito a bit more.
And so we were like, we got to do some Limoncello, but we got there, they didn't have any. So then I was like thinking, what are other weird cultural references to liquor? And we looked at Scotch for a second, because I'm always talking about Scotch because of Patton Oswalt and Ron Burgundy. But then, like, that didn't pan out, because Scotch is fucking expensive.
Yeah, we saw Glenfiddich, I think.
Glenlivet.
No, I think it was Glenfiddich, which was like $130 a bottle.
Right, right.
We saw Glenlivet on the shelf. That was more like $20 a bottle.
But then we were like, then I told Nick a story. Now, those of you who are frequent viewers of E, it happens a lot during The Soup, this is how I know about it. You'll see these commercials with Soprano star Michael Imperioli talking about 1800 tequila. And he's just sitting there in this dark room with a bottle in front of him, and he's like, I'm Michael Imperioli. I like tequila. Turns the bottle over. 1800 just poured me a shot. And so, like, like, I mean,
you must have said that like 5 or 6 times.
Oh my God,
I did. Store. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, but the thing about 1800 is that, like, it's got this little spout on top and the lid is this hollowed out glass piece.
It's basically a rectangular shot glass.
Yeah. And you just tip it over or flip it upside down and it pours it in. And then you're somehow supposed to...
I think the idea is that it somehow stops itself. Like, it does when it pours a shot. It doesn't just stop, like, you can see the air bubbles pop up, like,
right.
Oh, I am done pouring you this shot. But when you're trying to pull the top out of the bottle, all it tells you is to turn the bottle horizontally.
That doesn't work.
Doesn't work.
No.
It had some rather sad and disastrous effects.
Well, first
evening.
We lost a little bit of a splash, and we're like, oh, we'll pay that, no mind. That just happened. We can get over that.
That was our first time, you know, we'll do it.
That was when I took my shot, and then you were going to take yours, so you head over to the sink to be a little more safe. You pour your shot, tip it over on the side, try to pull the stopper out. Half the bottle goes down the drain.
Oh, man, and spilled all over my forearm. It went all over the counter. I was pissed.
It was so depressing.
Like, half a bottle gone for no reason. I mean, if you're going to design something, it's a neat idea, but if you're going to design something like that, make sure it works.
And make sure, like, you give the instructions clearly and make sure, like, the way I pictured it, the way I imagined it working was that, like, you know how, like, they have those ketchup bottles now that have that weird little, like, suction thing in the lip that, like, squirts it out in one straight shot and kind of sucks itself back in. I expected it would be kind of something like that, but it wasn't. It was just a fucking hole in a piece of rubber cork. Did not work.
Yeah.
So we're very angry with you, Michael Imperioli.
Well, how much blame can you give to Michael Imperioli? Shouldn't you be pissed at the 1800 tequila company?
This is true.
However, in its defense, it was not bad tequila.
It was really fucking good tequila.
And pretty smooth tequila for a bottle of that price. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the reason that you, when you're doing tequila shots, you pour the salt on your hand and then do the lime afterwards, because tequila is not really that smooth
traditionally. Well, that's how Michael Imperioli sells it. It's supposed to be smooth, so smooth, you don't need all that. You just sit there, like Michael Imperioli, at a desk and take a shot and be like, I used to be on The Sopranos.
And here's my tequila of choice.
Yeah.
I wanted to buy a bottle of Patron, but Jeff was so intent on following up his references that...
Yeah.
Now I'm making it sound like I blame you. I really don't.
I mean, it was true, though. So many things we do are based on, hey, Nick, did you see that commercial? And then inevitably you're like, no, I don't watch commercials. And
I think it's funny that you keep asking me if I've seen these commercials when I've firmly established that I don't watch commercials.
I know. We had a long conversation about Super Bowl commercials earlier.
We did. The Cat Rangers was the one
that stuck up.
The Cat
Ranchers, yeah. Because we were talking about, we were listening to Brown Sugar by the Rolling Stones, and I was like, hey, Nick, you remember that Super Bowl commercial where the mosquito was drinking Pepsi and singing Brown Sugar in that Zorak voice? And you were like, what are you talking about? So I did a little bit, I was like, Brown Sugar, and then like...
I'm firmly convinced that your imitations of things are better than the real things.
Maybe. But we were talking about that, and I was like, you know, Nick commented, you know, that you don't think... There have been a lot of classic Super Bowl commercials lately, and the fact is, it's true. Like, I mean, they're memorable for, like, the first month after lately, but then you kind of forget about them. The last one that really made an impact, I feel, was the Cat Wranglers, which was, like, in 1995.
Was the Budweiser What's Up thing, was that a Super Bowl commercial?
Yeah, that was true. That was 1998, yeah.
That shit stuck around.
I mean, it died out, and then Michael Scott brought it back for a second.
Well, because it was... dead and gone.
Yeah,
you know,
Michael
Scott. And then because it became hip, to quote The Office, people started doing it again. And this time it wasn't a quote of the commercial, it was a quote of a quote.
Yeah.
You know, people like to do that. Well, we're hip.
There was that
these days.
The Budweiser frogs. Remember the Budweiser frogs?
Vaguely.
Budweiser.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that. Seems beer commercials do pretty good jobs.
They do a really good job. Yeah. Like they tap into that surreal thing. The one thing I was saying though is like the one place where you can really find really good surreal commercials, and it's not even like the advertisers themselves doing it these days, is the Doritos contest they do every year where they pick like an amateur filmmaker to do a commercial, and they pick out of the best ones and they put it on the air. And you know my acquaintance, but you've enjoyed his works as well, Mr. Mark Potts. He's done quite a few entries. None of them have made it through, sadly, but they've all been wonderful. And the folks behind 5 Second Films have done a couple as well. I think the one they did last year almost made it. It was second place. But...
Fun fact about me. You know that Coca-Cola filmmakers challenge they do every year? You see them in theaters?
Yeah.
One of the kids at my school did a commercial that actually got in the finals, like the final 10.
Yeah.
And I got picked to do the music for it.
Is this recent? Like this year?
Last year.
Oh.
And... it might even still be up on the website, but I was really hoping it would win, and it didn't.
You always see those during the what's that shit called? Why am I forgetting it all of a sudden?
Screen Vision.
Screen Vision.
With Bradford Howe.
I almost called it Cinemantics, which is
remember
your
Cinemantics, which you know did those Coca-Cola commercials.
Screen Vision still exists, but Bradford Howe is gone. They've done away with.
They've
done away with the host.
We had fun making fun of Bradford.
We really did, that poor bastard. But he's gone now. Screen Vision is now just like. There's no, it's not him. Like, the people who make Screen Vision, I think they merged with the people who did the 20, and now it's just become First Look, so it's always this, like, seductive woman saying, you know,
up next,
Warner Brothers shows you a preview of Bargaba. And so, like now it's, that's all it is anymore. Movie theaters. I haven't been to enough movies lately. I saw The Green Hornet, and as I said before, like,
I'm sure we'll cover it on your show when it comes out on DVD.
We probably will eventually. I do want to see it again, and the reason why I say this is because, like, I saw The Green Hornet, and man, like, that movie divided some people.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Graham Elwood, God, he hated that movie. You don't listen to comedy film nerds currently, right?
Not currently. I listened to, like, 5 or 6, and then I just sort of stopped. It's not because I didn't like it, I just... Stop.
You have a lot of podcasts, that's the thing.
I do. I mean, I got so caught up with work and school and stuff, and all these podcasts just kept piling up, and, you know, I'm so far behind now, I just need, like, a summer break or something where I don't have to do any schoolwork, and I can just sit and listen to, like, 6 podcasts a day.
Right.
You know.
But The Green Hornet, the thing about that movie is, like, you know, I think they missold it, as they do a lot of things. We've talked about this before, marketing both works and... destroys me, because marketing works sometimes. Example, Michael Imperioli. And then sometimes it doesn't work in the case of Green Hornet. I mean, I wanted to see the Green Hornet anyway, because I love, like, you know me, I love superheroes, I love mass vigilantes, I love that shit. So I was intrigued. And I love Seth Rogen. I do. I hated listening to people saying, like, he shouldn't be playing a Green Hornet, he's fat. He lost a shit ton of weight. He's fucking smooth now, man. That fella, he's dreamy, you know, like, it's a thing. But,
well, if we're going to talk about that, I've always felt that body type is less important than the face of a person.
Right, right.
I can't tell you how many people I haven't given a second look to who have amazing bodies, but who just aren't attractive, you know.
A butter face, or in your case, a butt-his face?
Well, no, not a butter face. I mean, there are people who can be attractive and still be, you know, a little portly.
Right,
because if you have a nice face, you have a nice face. It doesn't really matter what your body type
is.
Yeah,
Seth Rogen, he's never been like unattractive.
I mean, he's goofy looking.
He's goofy looking, but he's got kind of a charming look about him. But anyway, no, but now that he's like slimmed down, he's a smooth motherfucker. And the thing is, like, the Green Hornet, like, they missold it in two ways. They missold it, one, as just, like, the wacky Seth Rogen comedy. And they sold it the other way, which was the masked vigilante movie.
Right.
They made a mistake doing both of those, because what it really was, and this is the way that I kind of want to watch it again, because I want to come to learn to love it in this way, because, you know, it was written by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, the people who brought you Superbad and Pineapple Express. Two great R-rated comedies. Green Hornet's PG-13, and I think that's actually its downfall, because you can tell they wrote a much more R-rated movie.
Do you think they might release, like, a director's cut or something?
I sure hope so. Let me tell you something. Because, like, there are things about it that I love. Like, the way I learned to realize that you have to like it, that you can like it, is you have to look at it like this. You have to forget that it's based on a pre-existing product, and you have to forget that it's a Seth Rogen movie in a way. You have to just look at it like, this is Pineapple Express with vigilantes in it.
Or you said Observe and Report,
There's a little bit of Observe and Report, because there are some violent shit happens to some people in the movie. Like, there are some violent deaths in that movie, and like just general citizenry of Los Angeles. A lot of people, like, get blown up just without a second thought, which I love, because it's weird. Like, some people will complain and say, that's heartless filmmaking, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, that's just so weird that I love it.
Like, it was, but it's also realistic. I mean, if you're going to take a dark comedy about superheroes, you should address the fact that, more likely than not, all that collateral damage would kill some people.
And
you
yet,
know?
In a weird way, I agree with, not Graham Elwood, but Chris Mancini, his co-host on Comedy Film Nerds. The way he put it was, if you take Kick-Ass and do everything wrong, that's the Green Hornet. Which, in a weird way, even though I didn't entirely hate it, I kind of see where he's coming from on that front. Like, I don't think they were trying to make Kick-Ass. I think they were, like I said, trying to make Pineapple Express with the Green Hornet in it. Which, if people can learn to look at it that way, I think it might actually have some life in it, after, you know, DVD sales and things like that. So maybe that'll work out, but as Nick blows out the ashes of his cigar...
Well, it got caught in my cigarette lighter.
Oh, shit.
But it's clean now.
That same lighter we've had since the first cigars.
Yeah, well, I don't use it very often.
That's true. But anyway, yeah, there was that, and that happened, Green Hornet. God, I had some things I wanted to talk about, but I'm blanking. I don't want to, like... I don't want to do what we often used to do, which is like, I don't know what to talk about. Silence, rambling for 20 minutes.
I mean, have you considered that maybe we could, I mean, not that I'm saying we should, but I mean, maybe start doing with shorter episodes just so we can cut out that flap?
I mean, I've thought about it. I mean, we probably could, but I feel like there was something else I want to talk about. I wish I'd brought a list of topics. That's one thing I've started, like...
And I think that's funny that you mentioned that, because you've got, like, a sticky note with a list of topics to talk
not
about.
Not topics, but these are announcements I want to make, because this is our first episode back after a month. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be a very different year, because not only, you know, is this happening because of not being able to come here a lot, but, like, I don't mean to get dark, and I don't want to really go into it too much, but the fact of the matter is, there's going to be some massive changes in our lives, or at least your life, starting in May. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what's going to happen with that.
Right.
And it's a matter of, like, it kind of works out serendipitously that the season is going to end in early June, because that'll be the real evaluation point. Like, that'll be when we really decide what's going to happen next.
Right.
Because I don't want to stop doing this. This has been really good for me, and, like, I've really enjoyed doing this here podcast. I mean, we kind of lost the touch for it, but we got it back. Like, yeah. Like in the past 2 weeks, like, we've both been listening to all those old episodes, and you've been getting really excited.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been really looking forward to this, because my term back has been so busy and so stressful. that I've needed something fun to do, and taking a break from podcasting, while I felt it was kind of necessary, my batteries needed to recharge. I feel like it's time to get back on the bandwagon and start cranking these out again.
Yeah.
You know, they're fun to do, and I like talking about movies with you, so.
Yes. Well, what more is there to say, then? Like, the one thing, I will say a couple of things. One, we missed out on a couple of things. I'll just briefly go over this before we kind of wrap things up. A couple of things that we would have done had we still been recording that didn't happen. We didn't do a Golden Globisode. We didn't do our Mike's Hard Year that was. But as I said, like, 2010, like you said, you didn't have as harsh feelings about it, but...
Well, it was a good and bad year, but I felt that the good outweighed the bad. But I think you're the opposite.
On my side, the bad definitely outweighed the... I mean, I'll give you a list of the things that happened very briefly. Conan leaves... Like, this is the order. And I know you thought I may have gotten a little over-emotional about this, but Conan, you know, he's way up there in the pantheon of my heroes. You know, like, his style is very, very much influenced mine. And, you know, like, when he left NBC, you know, we were all... At least I was, and a lot of people were, as evidenced by, you know, I'm with Coco and all that shit, you know. A lot of us were really brought down by that, because we were like, what the hell's going to happen to this guy? You know, I mean, now he's on TBS, flourishing, doing amazing things, and doing his old shtick and his good times. And that's good. But, like, you know, January, Conan leaves. First week of February, car accident. I lose Catalina, my beloved Saturn, to... insurance companies and people who, you know, I don't know what happened, but I kind of feel like my car was stolen in a weird way, because we never really got to work out the details, and people just kind of ran with it, and I never saw it again. That pisses me off. Now I've got my Impala, Suzy, S-U-Z-E-E. Yeah, have I ever explained the reference there?
Is it? Oh, maybe. Is it another Power Rangers reference?
No, the secondary reference is Power Rangers, but the first reference has always been Space Cases, that old show on Nickelodeon.
Uh-huh.
The Saturn was named Catalina because there was a character on that show named Catalina who was from Saturn. And then in the first season, she had an imaginary friend named Suzy, spelled S-U-Z-E-E, that she always talked about, and everyone's like, she's not really there. And then in the second season, you find out that she was in this weird, like... parallel universe that she was there the whole time, but just nobody could see her.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's like this weird like wormhole in the end of the first season where like they switch places, and then Susie's the real person and Catalina's the imaginary person. So weird. But anyway, I was like, now that I don't have Catalina, she's become Suzy, my Impala. And it was Catalina, the Zeo Megazord, and now it's Suzy, the Astro Megazord. I skipped Turbo. I went from Zeo to In Space.
Well, no one likes Zeo.
Because that's what a nerd I am. No, I mean, you
or
mean
Turbo.
Turbo. I liked Zeo. Zeo was interesting. It was very...
Well, clearly you liked it enough to name your car after it.
We've talked about this on both the Power Ranger movie episodes, but, like, I love that shit. Like, I've always said before, you know, the saga should have ended within space. I dig that there have been spinoffs since, and SPD and Dino Thunder were fucking awesome, but in all seriousness, it should have ended within space. The saga ended, I destroyed Zordon, the energy went out, and we've talked about this before. I don't need to go off on this again. But it's Suzy the Astro Megazord, and that's what happened with that. But that happened in February. I had a very awkward falling out with someone very close to me in February. And just completely based on this person does not know enough of the world to know all the things they were doing wrong and holding it against me, and just it was a bad time. And then April comes, I'm doing that documentary about my father, and that was hell. Like, that didn't go anywhere where it was supposed to. I had some family problems in April, you'll remember this.
How did that turn out, by the way? I don't really remember how your professor took it, or...
He was supporting me all the way. I'm going to say this, and I know this will kind of reveal where I went to school, but I do want to say this because I never really said it before. But Brett Ingram, my professor of documentary at the University of Choice, he's a very talented filmmaker, and he's done some great work. Very nationally recognized. He's a fantastic guy, and he was there. He was my support every step of the way, and I thanked him, but I can't thank him enough. He was so understanding, and he understood what I was going through. It was a weird-ass time, man. Summer happened, and then I ended up in a very, very brief relationship, fulfilling a long-time promise to the girl that got away. She cheated on me. And then we...
went your separate ways.
Went our separate ways, and I came back home, and I've just been... And then I was into this depressive funk for the first 3 or 4 months, where it was just like, you know, but then I just... You know me, I mean, you can't tell from the way I acted all throughout 2010, but the fact of the matter is, at root, I am an optimist. And... And that year just sucked so much of that out of me that everything became so negative. And like I said, I became very over-compensatory about everything. And it was a hard time, you know. And I just came to this realization. I was sitting at home like about a month ago, and I was just like, a lot of this stress I am creating for myself. You know, the truth of the matter is employment sucks. The economy sucks. I'm having a hard time finding a job. My hometown is not necessarily the best place for someone in my field. But if I spend all my time bitching about being there, I'm just going to depress myself.
Right.
I always used to pride myself on being this guy who could find the best in every situation he was in. And I lost that so bad. And now I'm trying to get it back. And I'm getting there. And I'm getting really good at it. And I'm trying to find, like, remedies. Like, I'm just trying to make the best of a bad situation. And I think I'm doing a good job of it. And that's really what this is all about. If I can tie a running theme into this weird jumble of an episode, is that this is really our chance to make the best of a bad situation. Because we had a month. I mean, like I said, it was a good break. We needed a break to recharge our batteries. I mean, it's weird. It all started just because our schedules didn't mesh on one occasion. And then we just had this idea, take a month off. Mm. And it really fucking helped.
Yeah.
And so I'm really glad about that. So, yeah, I guess this has been kind of a sincere episode. I kind of wanted to come back with big laughs and a lot of good times.
Well, we got to get this stuff off the chest.
We do. So I want to thank everybody for listening. And this has been really good. Do you feel complete?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll make these closing announcements. First off, I'm very excited about this one. And you know this. You know that, and long-time listeners will know that I am a big fan of WWE, which I realize, you know, when you hear somebody say that, you want to automatically deduct about 100 IQ points. But understand this, and as I said many times before, I watch it for the writing. Or that's kind of the catch-all description I use. You've watched me watch it, and you've watched it with me. You know kind of what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, I don't watch it I started watching it when I was a kid, and it was very much like, oh, this is living comic book with all these crazy things happening. It's a superhero fan. I was totally down for it. It was awesome. That was also the late 90s when WWE was just at its fucking peak. Like, just, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, early nascent days of Triple H. Like, this was a good time to be a wrestling fan. And, you know, it was really fun. Like, it was so, and the great thing about it was that it was kind of like forbidden fruit because it was very risque back then. Like, parents were like, kids shouldn't be watching that, man. And I've always been the guy who bucks those conventions. So, of course, I just fell more and more in love with it. And as time's gone on, I've come to view it in a way that, like, I don't know how to describe it. Like, the way I describe it in some circles is that I watch it for the writing and the theatricality.
Right.
It's a living, it's a stage performance where people kick each other's asses. Like, that's what it is. It's basically like a soap opera meets ballet meets Ultimate Fighting. Like, that's WWE. That's sports entertainment, professional wrestling, whatever you want to call it. I don't watch TNA, as I'll explain in the thing I'm about to announce. Starting tomorrow, as of the day this is posted, the OUP family of podcasts is growing by one. With the addition of our third show, it's a solo show for me, because one of the things that I wanted to do something that keep my podcast juices flowing but not be restricted by the fact that, you know, we have to travel to see each other, and we don't want to do long distance episodes anymore, which, like I said, that really fucked things up. I think we can agree with that. Like, we had some good conversations, but that, all the troubles with the computers.
Yeah, I'm glad to not be doing that anymore.
So, I mean, it was a bad time. But I was just like, I want to do something where I can talk about something that really interests me on a weekly basis. And so, starting tomorrow, which will be February 5th, 2011, the OUP family of podcasts welcomes the Writers Wrestling Podcast, or the WWP. It'll be going up tomorrow night, Saturday night. It'll be every Saturday night. I'm giving it a 13-episode commitment, as I told Nick earlier. I'm like a network head. I'm giving it a 13-episode commitment. I'm going to see how it goes for the first 13 weeks. And if I'm really enjoying myself and doing something that really, you know, gets my goat, it'll keep going. And I think this is now as good a time as any. Like, I know the list won't matter to a lot of them. I mean, let's face it. Like, I'm sure out of all of our listeners on this show, maybe one other person is in the WWE, and that's totally fine. But the point is, like, it's something that I dig, and it's going
to
be...
Well, you know, it might be a chance to expand your podcasting to a wider market, because there is a massive fan base for wrestling.
Oh, there certainly is, sir.
So if you put it out in the right channels, you could get a lot of listeners for it.
Right. So, yeah, starting tomorrow, the Writers Wrestling Podcast, Saturday nights, be a bit of just my rants and thoughts on the week of wrestling. And now is a great time to start, because last night, as of this recording, we're recording this on the Monday, technically, January 31st. Last night was the Royal Rumble. So it's sort of the start of the, in many ways, it's sort of the birth of like the home stretch. We're headed toward the season finale, which is, you know, WrestleMania. So that's a very big deal. Very excited about that. And I won't go into it too much because I'm going to do it in the opening of that show. But basically what we're going to be dealing with here, and I actually invite all general audiences to be able to listen to, just give it a shot. Just see how you feel about it. What I'm planning on doing is trying to kind of not sway people to the way I watch it, but just kind of open the floor to people who watch it the way I do. And you kind of watch it the way I do, too, when you do watch it with me. So
well,
I mean,
I watched it at the cusp when it was still awesome. And then after I started watching it, like, I started watching it on an absolute highlight. Like, I think we can agree. The scene where Randy Orton and Triple H fight in his house.
Yeah, that was so great.
It was pretty epic. And I saw that and was like, okay, I understand where Jeff is coming from here. This is ridiculous and over the top and delightful.
You have to, like, it's
again,
pitch.
You don't watch it as like, oh yeah, fighting testosterone. You watch it for the wacky theatrics of it. But after I started watching it, it took this steady downhill.
What happened was, I guess I
sort of lost interest in it after that.
I guess I should talk about it. We're going to keep talking because this just got interesting. What happened with that is, the fact of the matter is, Linda McMahon, wife of Vince McMahon, the founder, or the son of the founder of WWE, his wife ran for Senate in Connecticut. And sort of to help her reputation as a candidate, the show went from being rated TV-14 to TV-PG. And the fact of the matter is that ever since that happened, they haven't really known how to use TV-PG to their advantage or how to use it while still making an interesting TV show. Like, they've cleaned it up too much, and the storylines have gotten repetitive and boring. And I keep watching it because I've been watching it for,
long
13
time.
Years now. So, like, it's, you know, I don't want to give up on it because it can get good again. And it's actually on its way. It's doing very well now. They finally kind of started to figure out how to use TVPG.
And do you think that since she lost the Senate race, they're going to try and bump the...
I think they're finally kind of realizing we got to take it back up. So
I think that'll work to its advantage.
I think it's a really good time to start talking about it on a weekly forum. So, yeah, that's happening tomorrow. The Riders Wrestling Podcast. The website is already open. It's riderswrestlingpodcast.blogspot.com, and hopefully it'll be in the iTunes store by that point. On a similar note, and sort of semi-related, the OUP now has its own official email address, where you can email us comments and love and what have you. And that is, of course, the email address, as you'll see on our website, or if you're just an iTunes subscriber, it is oupmailbag@gmail.com. So check that out, and just if you're listening and you have any interest in the other show, the WWP, the Writers Wrestling Podcast, you can find that at wwpmailbag@gmail.com. So that's happening. On a similarly related note, the OUP now also has its own official Twitter feed, which you can find at @OUPTweets. Check that out now, and we'll have information about upcoming episodes, exclusives about certain things. Like, you know, we'll have links to certain things we talked about. Like, it's just what I'm realizing, and you know, they were talking about this on the Nerdist earlier as well. Is that, you know, you've got to expand to all the different forms of social networking to kind of get a grasp of a bigger audience. So if you enjoy your Twitter and you want to see some interesting things, check us out at @OUPTweets. And of course, we've mentioned it kind of briefly before, but seriously. "Quote unquote," like us on Facebook, which has almost become like kind of the real hub of the show, the Facebook page for the OUP. So do check that out. I'm going to work with Nick on this to get one open for Cinemantics soon.
That'll certainly, I think, be up by the time the first new Cinemantics episode airs,
which will be coming out the week after this is posted, the next Friday. We won't tell you what we're covering yet.
It's exciting for me, and it's an episode that's been in the works for a long time.
On both of our shows, so it's a big deal. Let's just say it's one of the most discussed films, and a film that's been a point of contention with me for a long time. So I hope you would tune in for that. We'll have more details on that. And finally, review us on iTunes. We've said it before. We've gotten a couple. You know, if you're just a sporadic listener and you've liked what you've heard, you know, please just give it, you know, you gotta get the ratings, you gotta get the star ratings, you gotta get the comments. You know, we've been noted as a new and noteworthy podcast on the iTunes store, I think twice now, this was way back when, but still, like, it's happened, so we've been out there. So yeah, give us a shot, you know, like, this is a new day for the, OUP and the OUP family of podcasts, OUP, Cinemantics, and WWP. definitely inspired by Kevin Smith. There's no denying it. The Smodcast Podcast Network. But yes, thank you for all your support, folks. It's been an interesting month, and I hope you'll rejoin us. Tell your friends, as Alan Coulter of The Late Show with David Letterman would say. So yeah, that's about it. That's our welcome back. So yeah, tune in next week on Cinemantics for an episode that's, just, as he said, it's been a long time in making. We hope you enjoy it. And 2 weeks from this episode's posting on the OUP, we'll be covering what is, I'm officially putting it in cement, my favorite movie of 2010. We're covering it next in 2 weeks on the OUP episode.
We've already covered my favorite movie of 2010.
We did. I mean, it's my second favorite, Scott Pilgrim, but my first favorite. We'll be covering in 2 weeks on the OUP. So very excited about that. It's good to be back, man.
Yeah.
It feels good to have this back in our lives. So thanks for waiting out the hiatus. And tell your friends, stick with us, all that contact shit. You heard it, repeat it, rewind it, see it, feel it, reveal it.
Yeah. I'm glad that you and me were on the same wavelength there.
Yeah. And I hope the sound quality on this has been good, because I have been very cautiously quiet, I realize. Yes, once again, thanks for listening, and I'm Jeff Heatherly.
I'm Nick Melton.
And as always, go experience 7 days. Good night. Even if it takes a lifetime, somehow I feel inside, you never ever left my side. Even flow.